Hey, movie lovers, welcome back for another Anatomy of Movie here at the Popcorn Talk Network. Today, we're dissecting Jason Statham's new movie called The Meg. That's right, the Megalodon comes back from prehistoric times and eats everyone alive. Spoiler alert. Just kidding. We'll find out.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're here. Is it Jaws? Is it Piranha 3D? We'll find out. Allow me to introduce Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Dimitri Panos.
Hey, everybody, movie fans, welcome back.
Yeah, I've always been here.
Except for the last episode we did.
That is true.
Which, check out, if you like Black Klansman, which I know the two are very similar in theme.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And I'm Phil Svitek. Good to be here. A couple things right off the bat. Number one, if you're joining us for the very first time, well, welcome. If you're returning, welcome as well. You know at this point that here's how we do things. Number one, we're not just a review show. We go into depth with doc storylines, plots, and also give you the how and the why, meaning why certain story elements work, how they were made from a behind-the-scenes perspective, and of course we get into the marketing, the promotion, the box office, and all that stuff. So all them goodies. Speaking of which, all of our research is compiled for you in a little PDF in the description box that you can click and follow along, because sometimes we don't get to every little minutia, but nonetheless, it is there for you to browse through later. And last but not least, if you couldn't tell by the sound of my voice, this is going to be very spoiler-filled. So, if you haven't seen it, that's okay. It's not the world's worst movie that I spoiled, I guess. But nonetheless, I encourage you to see the movie first and then check us out. So like, put us on pause.
You mean to tell me you weren't shocked by that big twist? That it actually was a porpoise the entire time?
Well, since you asked, normally we go into overall thoughts, but I'll just skip ahead into this. I did not know this movie would have two megalodons. And that is what I want your reaction on.
Well, me neither going into this film. But admittedly, there was a point in the movie where I did have a thought, what if there's two? Because there was a scene where they were explaining, they opened this channel, the heat waves. And as if you're listening on iTunes, you definitely check us out on YouTube. I have a lot of arm motions. So they opened this channel that allowed, and they said the line, 20 sharks could get through. I was like, oh, crap, what if another megalodon went through? And then sure enough. So not at the beginning, I thought it would only be like one shark and done. But nope, there was two.
Nah.
Okay, well, first off, I am going to give my opinion.
Sure.
It's my guilty movie pleasure of the summer. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not a good movie, really, but it doesn't mean I didn't have any fun watching it, especially with my audience who was, like, shrieking and screaming and the other thing, too, is, like, I actually have read the books. And Meg, it was called Meg by Steve Alton, came out, like, 20 years ago.
And 7.
Jeez.
21.
Old. A little over there.
You know, and the thing about the book is it's like Michael Crichton light. It's definitely, some of the reviews were said like Jurassic Shark, right? And he has that style of Crichton by combining science with fiction and this. And it was a cheesy summer beach read. Like, it's just fun. You don't take it seriously. I like shark stories and whatnot. So this movie was pretty much that. If I were going to critique it, I would say I wish it were more like the book in various plot points, including how the shark, how the Meg
gets through,
goes topside, because it's a really good scene. It's a really great scene in the book. And I wish that there was more carnage. Like, to me, when you have a creature this size, like, there should be body parts, like, flying around. Like, there should be chomp and, like, boom, like, body parts being separated. And there should have been, like, way more of, like, that shark coming up and just devouring people.
There's a reason why there was less carnage than you would normally see.
Right, and I understand. But those are, like, my big critiques. Mm-hmm. Now, going to your point of, did you know that there were two sharks? That was actually foreshadowed, and it's a Jaws reference. And this movie references every Jaws movie that has been made, and that's four of them.
So we're going to have a fun section where Dimitri rattles
every Jaws reference from the movie. So, but we'll do that later. But there was a scene, I'm going to, spoiler alert, where they had the first shark and they lifted it up on the crane, and somebody goes, huh, there's something about the bite radius here that's not matching up with. So, and that's like right out of the movie Jaws. When Hooper's like, yeah, the bite marks on this tiger shark, don't match up with the victims of Chrissy. So I was like, okay, that's total Jaws reference. So that foreshadowed, and then we got Mega Megalodon. We got Mama Shark or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it was fun. And I'll go into the reference of that, too. That is a reference in the Jaws movies, the bait and switch of sharks.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I appreciate, you know, it is a guilty pleasure for me as well. I do like shark movies of all kinds. I have been preaching Sharknado since its inception. So,
yeah, no, it's true.
You know, it's right up my alley. I enjoy it a lot. As far as you know, one of the things I credit the author in particular for, like, he's been fighting to sort of get this made, and not because of his own sort of ambition, but because people just responded that well to these books, and they said, hey, this should be a movie. And back before, like, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, or any of these crowdfunding, even before social media, he had a website that got 65,000 people to say, hey, I would want to see this movie, which in today's day and age might not seem as much, but again, he's an author. This was at the start of, like, when people really started using the internet. Like, yeah, that's crazy.
21 years ago. And again, he had no idea.
Forward thinking.
Yeah, well, and he had no idea that Meg, like, he didn't think that he would be writing six sequels to the book. And so he wrote another book, maybe two, in between some of the Meg books. They didn't do as well. It was like, hey, no, write us another Meg book. People love this Meg, like this Meg story. So, but they are fun reads. And, you know, when you read it, it's, again, I compare it to Crichton, because when you read Crichton novels, there's a cinematic feeling through it. Like, you can go, oh, I could see this on the big screen. And while I was reading this going, oh, this would be so awesome as a movie. You know, he had that fluidity, that cinematic spark. Writing this, and they were just fun reads.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to kick us off with was talking about, did the notion of hiding the shark for so long in the movie hurt kind of its momentum? Only because, like, we know from the marketing, we know from the title, at this point, any person realistically that's going to see this movie understands that there's going to be a big giant shark. So the idea to have to hide it for so long and make it so ominous, I don't know, maybe it's just the way it was marketed where it felt like it was going to be a lot more carnage instead of this tension. I felt maybe that hurt it just a little bit too much. And also, we, you know, the way the movie works at the end is when finally we get to this beach and we get to all these people that I don't know them, but I love them. Sure, they're great. But however, on screen, I haven't developed an attachment for them. So I'm like, okay, this is where everyone dies. Great.
They're chum. Yeah, they're chum.
I don't, to answer your first question, I don't think the movie deterred from, I mean, this is a thriller suspense in for a reveal of a big scary creature. If you think about it, we saw the first Meg probably in like the first 20 minutes of the film. That's really not that long. And we know from the trailers what a big megalodon already looks like. And I think just the reveal of the full Meg the first time, it's in darkness. There was the suspense. There was the music buildup. We know something was coming after the little hovercraft thing underneath. It was actually a submarine, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
The vestibule that they were stuck in, we knew that something was going to attack them. So we waited, actually. I don't think the film took forever to reveal it because we saw it in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to say I wanted more Shark. I wanted more Meg. There was a lot, again, I'm just going back to the book. There was a lot of Meg going on, and I wanted some more Meg. The pacing for an action thriller like this, for me, there were parts of it that were long. Without the shark, without the megalodon, and I think it could have used the like the saying goes, more cowbell. This mm-hmm. could have used more Meg, but again, ultimately, I still had fun. I didn't, you know, I thought the way that it was presented with the submersible being stuck and mm-hmm. it getting crushed, like the Jason Statham, like they're trying to rescue it. I thought that scene was filmed actually really well, and it was good. So. You know, when we finally see it and we're anticipating it, because they did give it away. They give it away in the trailer. So once it's there, I know my audience was like, yeah! So.
See, the thing is, I think it takes longer in the movie Jaws to reveal the full shark than it did in this film.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Jaws did something completely different, and Jaws was in and of its own time and a byproduct of that. At this point, we know those tropes, so we can speed it up.
We need instant gratification to see it faster.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, Jaws, there were reasons why. I mean, the shark just didn't work, so they had to film around that. That's why the shark, the opening to the original Jaws had the shark worked, you would have gotten a completely different beginning. So they had to work around the follies of the shark. Here, what I don't like is, like, many people are, like, comparing this to Jaws, and I'm like, no. Like, you can compare it to Deep Blue Sea if you want to. Don't compare it to, like, an all-time classic. This isn't that movie. I don't think they hid the shark, so to speak, and when he shows up, I was fine. I was like, all right. He's here. All right. Start eating people.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think what sort of separates it is that we just spent so much time with the characters that we had, and you were so attached to them that you didn't want to see them die. And some of them, granted, did die, and those were tragic deaths, with, like, starting off with, like, Toshi and whatnot. I really liked this character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just needed more kind of innocent bystanders that didn't ask for this. And I think if anywhere, I want to get your perspective on this. To me, the movie took a misstep with the quote unquote villain, which is not the Meg for me, but it's Rainn Wilson's character of Morris.
Right.
Where he was at times a sympathetic billionaire, and other times, you know, granted, even when he was sympathetic, he was a little bit obnoxious and let's say ignorant. But then he went sort of villainous, and that just didn't quite work for me. When, in fact, like, had he just been this caring guy who just wanted to now prevent this Meg from killing everything, and unfortunately the Meg just went straight for the islands, that would have been a fun – it would have been a little bit better, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that, like, there were some moments where it's like, oh, he actually cares about people. And then there were some moments I'm like, okay, you're just naive. And or like someone who's a multi, you can quote, billionaire, and he doesn't know the exact project he's funding. I'm just like, okay, who are you? You obviously are going to die. It's just a matter of when and where. I don't think they really built him as a villain enough to be so dislikable that once he died, you're like, yeah, goodbye. We don't care about you anyways. I feel like they tried to add too many humanistic qualities to him. He was, like, too gray that we couldn't read his character. And that, therefore, we couldn't tell if he was actually good or bad.
Yeah, to me, he eventually turns bad. But I think, to your point, he was all for the cause. Like, he was all for the team. He was all for what they were doing. He wanted to see, you know, he was also, like, he's definitely not a John Hammond. If you want to compare this to Jurassic Park, where John Hammond wanted to do this and his heart was in the right place. It just a little bit misguided in how to do this, right? He wanted to do this for the exploration of it all. They didn't know they were going to find this Meg. He wanted to see what his money was going to. When they see the Meg, It's like, oh my God, we got this Meg. What are we going to do? Well, this is great. I can really turn this into money. But then he turned into this jerk where, oh my God, people died. I'm going to get sued. I got to take care of this problem.
Well,
I'm
going to lie to them. Yeah,
he lies to everybody. And he's like, I got to go take it. I notified everything. See you later, guys. And he turned out to be a really big dick. And to your point, like, had he just stayed the course of being like, oh my God, this is horrible. How are we going to fix this? He would have been better. But he does have, like, this turn where he's just like, just a jerk.
You're a jerk.
Yeah, you're a jerk.
You're a jerk.
So, but I sort of kind of knew he would, like, from the trailers and such, that he might be like a bad guy. But then when I'm watching in the movie, the characters seem to have like enthusiasm for what's going on. And I like that scene when he's in the elevator. He goes, I spent $1 billion in this elevator. It looks like this. Mm-hmm. Just wait. And the doors open. He's like, oh, like, this is great. And I thought, you know, I was into his enthusiasm at the beginning.
Yeah, I was too.
And I'm glad that he bought it when he did.
Yeah, and I think it, not to say Rainn Wilson's a bad actor, but, like, we know his characters that he tends to portray as an actor. It's like kind of the jerk of the office, of the room, you know. He's always that guy, like, okay, whatever. So I just couldn't take him, like, as a serious, nice person just because I know him and his characters. He is a character type of actor.
Yeah.
And usually ridiculous. Like, when Dwight from The Office is just a ridiculous character.
Right.
Exactly.
So
that didn't help him either.
And he did have that one line, too. Is like, well, why don't you just tag it? Number one, I don't know how Radar couldn't pick up a beast of that size. And I'm like, really? You got to tag something that's like 100 feet long and the size of like 100 yards wide? Okay. And he's like, why don't you just tag it? And they look at him like, didn't we watch Shark Week? Like, and then they go, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea.
Which, by the way,
these are scientists. They should know that.
They should know that.
Well, here's the thing. Every shark movie now has to have a reference to Shark Week.
Right.
It just, you know, you could look at Shark Night.
To make it relevant.
Exactly. Because, you have to, everyone's love and fascination for sharks, you have to kind of put in the movie. It's just a trope. It's a new trope.
Yeah.
One of the things I do want to applaud the movie for, though, is this, I've never seen it before. Maybe you guys have. I'm not sure. But this misdirection of a love story, where in any other movie, the guy that saves his ex-wife from being killed in a submarine, but, you know,
they
all
get
this
back together.
Romance is rekindled.
Right.
It's
like, nah, you know what? It's great that we're split up. You know what? Move on to her. She's great.
Move on to her. You know what was funny, too?
I didn't mind it.
I didn't mind it at all. And personally, I thought, look, I can't point to performances and praise them, but they were good enough for this film, and I felt that the chemistry that Statham had what's her name?
Bing Bing Lee.
I thought it worked. But it was funny because there was a part of the movie I'm going, wait a minute, what happened to the ex-wife? It's like they literally wrote her out of the movie for most of the movie. He rescues her. Oh, thanks, hon.
She's
whatever. And then all of a sudden I'm like, what the hell happened to her? I go, well, she's not coming back. They really are focusing on this. I go, yeah, it was better with that. Yeah.
I like the fact that they didn't really tell the audience their backstory either, why they broke up, what happened between them two. You just know that they are officially apart. They're separated in that sense. But it seemed like they are civil with each other. They're on talking terms, whatever, but they're not married. And I didn't mind that because even being with Bing Bing Lee's character, that, like, those two just had a better understanding in a work relationship environment. Like, they had some of the, like, the go-get-it attitude. So, like, their personality traits lined up better just in character-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to some of the differences from the book. Okay, so he wasn't like this Navy SEAL guy sent in a rescue. He was like an oceanographer, right? And they were studying the ocean floor. The team gets attacked by the Meg. He is the only one to survive this, but he sees the Meg. And then from there, he sort of becomes the Ian Malcolm that we see in The Lost World, where he's discredited. He's told to be, that he's a fool. All his life just goes to pot because he's known to be a crackpot now. That's part of what led to his wife like leaving. Like, he loses everything because of this belief that there's a Meg out there. And he's seen it, and everybody discredits him. So he's like that. Like I said, he's sort of kind of like Ian Malcolm, except he loses everything in his life. So they sort of kind of capture that in the movie here, you know, and not wanting to come back and such. And I wish there was a little bit more about that. But again, they just set it up differently. In the movie, I liked how it was approached in the book, where he was literally the sole survivor, so he couldn't, there were no witnesses. Or at least the other way, like, there were people that could sort of kind of go, well, there was definitely something out there. It was the that doctor. Jerk doctor, who they set up as a bad guy, who's sort of a good guy, and...
He redeemed himself.
He redeemed himself.
Good for him. you know, one of the things, like, when you look at this movie, it's really more of a family movie than anything. And one of the things I thought about while watching it is really comparing Jason Statham to The Rock. And we've talked about it in other movies, particularly with Rampage, which I doubt any of you guys have seen. Not meaning you guys, but our audience. But needless to say, The Rock has gone on record to say that he forced to change the ending because he wants, you know, no matter what's happening, he wants a feel-good family type movie.
Right.
And Jason Statham, in this way, he is able to play an anti-hero and yet be the family man.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say anti-hero, more reluctant hero.
Yeah.
Because you know he's a good guy. He can go save. You put him in a mission, he's like, yeah, send me. He's more the reluctant hero, and you don't expect that. I liked it because we saw how close everybody was in the cast, the ensemble. It is kind of an ensemble. So, like, mm-hmm. you stick together, you have a better chance of surviving together. And you always see, like, the one person who goes off script or goes rogue, you know, they're usually the first to die anyways. Right. So I liked we did. I can understand the whole family dynamic because I generally liked all these characters.
Yeah, same here. And specifically about Jason Statham, like, this is, you know, this is a big budgeted movie that he's carrying on his shoulders. But what I will say is he is coming to that part in his career where he definitely has a charisma. And I think what he showed from the last Fast and Furious movie, and it really carries on in this movie a lot, is like he works well with kids. Like, you buy the interaction. That fight scene in the last Fast and Furious movie that takes place on the plane where he has the toddler in the little carry-all.
I totally forgot
it's
about that.
Hysterical, but what makes it hysterical is the way that Jason Statham is talking to the baby. I actually like the scenes in The Meg where Jason Statham is talking to the little girl and she's like, hey, crazy, you know, but I like their dynamic. And with that, Statham builds a charm around himself.
It's like
and
a surrogate
his character.
Father figure.
Sure. But he's able to pull off that charm, which if you're going to be hefting an action movie on your shoulders, you need charm. And I think he's able to pull that off here. And I was like, you know what? Yes, he can start to... I know he's been in a lot of movies like Crank and such where he was the star. But now he's truly... I can say you can carry a big budgeted action film and you can be the star because people are going to like you because of your charisma and charm and heart because you can play that.
Well, you know, shout out to... 10-year-old who plays Mei Ying. She did a fantastic job because it's one thing for him to carry the scene, but she carries it equally.
Yeah.
And I thought the fact that they have so many interactions with her, they put a lot of trust in her for the movie, and I think it pays dividends.
And she wasn't the annoying kid either.
No, and I liked her, and like she played her part too because she was feeding the audience, or like more so feeding the characters. Like, this is information you may not heard of because I heard it, you know, in like private conversations. Right. And like, I thought she was great. She was endearing, and she played well against Jason Statham. But also, I was like, where's the security? She can get around that whole facility with no problem, and like no one's watching her. And I think that was like one of the one things that bothered me. I was like, who's watching the kid?
Yeah, it's a privilege of being like one of the architects of the thing. Yeah, I could just walk around. But
she's
I did like her.
Under construction areas. Where's the security? With a multi-billion facility, you'd think there'd be some security.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Even regardless, like the security guards drove by her and then like, hey. She's like, hi. Like, they just know. Like, that's what she does.
She's harmless.
She's such a fixture there. But yeah, she was good. She was good. I enjoyed watching her. She too had her little charisma. And even the scenes where she's with Statham, but also with Suyin, I found that the scenes, she worked. She worked.
Mm-hmm. She was absolutely fantastic. I give her a lot of props. I want to kind of shift gears, if that's okay with you guys. And, you know, because the crux of what we went to see the movie for is the action. And so I want to talk about the action, but I want to do it in tandem talking about the production aspects.
Sure.
Okay. So I think they just go part and parcel.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I, you know, real fast, that what makes Jason Statham so charismatic, I don't know who wrote that line for him of just keep swimming, but just when he's... You know, out. I mean, granted, he's in like this tank, but like just keep swimming. I thought was the nicest little touch as the camera's pulling away.
Not only was it a great touch, the audience I saw it with just laughter all around. It was just so funny, and to hear him go, just keep swimming.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is, like, he's such a brute character. You ironically don't expect him to be singing such a fun, you know, line. And I think that also just appeals to the younger demographic too, who's also fans of Disney. Right. And even Nemo. That movie, and Finding Nemo, even that movie had a shark in it. Yeah. So I think that was like a line to appeal to the masses. Yeah.
And he was a swimmer. So he knew what he was doing when it came to diving and how to swim and all that stuff. And you can tell he seemed to swim pretty good.
He did. Yeah. He needed to do a lot of swimming.
Yeah, he did a lot. Yep.
Good for him.
Who wants to kick us off and kind of give a quick recap of how they pulled off some of these?
What about like the two huge tanks
sure.
at the New Kamu Film Studios in New Zealand? Well, number one, it was a nice vacation for everybody to go to New Zealand film this. So an enormous exterior tank holding approximately 2.5 million liters. Which I'm not in the metric system, but that's a lot of water.
It's their measurement.
It's a lot of water.
Divided by four, and that's how many gallons, give or take, it is.
Served as the water surface tank. That was the water surface. So, and then a separate dive tank, 18 meters in diameter, 5 meters deep, holding approximately 1.26 million liters, was indoors. So that to me is like... And again, the movie magic for me worked. I mean, it all looked like it was in the open sea. So it was great. But that's 2.5 million and 1.26 million liters of water. That's a lot of water.
Yeah. And they
hope it was heated.
Oh, yeah. Probably not. They did 5 months of filming. So that's a lot of time spent just in the water alone for the cast.
I mean, it's a lot. I would feel a lot safer. Like, to me... If I ever had to like look at making a shark movie and we were doing it in the middle of nowhere, all of a sudden, I don't know, there's just this paranoia that would probably creep in. Whereas if I know I have a tank,
which is a lake,
basically,
right? It's a big lake that you just created.
Yeah, as long as no one's being funny and puts a shark in there, right. I'm good.
And
the worst prank.
And again, if you are a film historian, going back to Jaws, shooting on, like, one of the things that Spielberg really wanted to do was film in the ocean, and that proved to be one of the worst, hardest things to do, because there's just no way of knowing when, how these tides are going to change and whatever. At least now, with a Hollywood standard, you have everything in control the way that you want it to be. You don't have to worry about boats floating away or floating out of focus or out of shot, which
controlled environment.
Yeah, Spielberg, you just had no idea. So, yeah.
And one of the aspects that I love about the movie cinematography, and I think what works for it so terrifyingly, is the idea of where it's very seamless as far as seeing the water going underneath and coming back out. You know, oftentimes that doesn't always work, and it makes it seem so seamless, and they really took advantage of it. And it's not just like, oh, if the water's coming up and down and just happens to hit. Like, they're very deliberate in the movement of going underwater, coming back out, and the way they pull that off.
Right.
Yeah, so the Megalodon itself, it was actually combined shots of CG with actual practical models. And just the look of the Megalodon, I believe in the book they said... they described it more like translucent type of look, and it's more sensitive to light because it's deeper underwater. And
right.
But obviously we can't have a translucent creature. I mean, right. We have to see it to for it to be scary. So they actually gave it actual coloring.
Yeah, I know in the book there's a big deal that a lot of it, when you say translucent, Alden described it as like a white, like a very pale white.
Pure white luminescent.
Yeah. That, and again, this thing can be seen from a distance because of its disposition, let's say, from where it came from. So, yeah, the other cool thing, too, is like filming in the tanks, and then that they actually did film some stuff on the actual water, including the just keep swimming scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jason Statham, I mean, it should be no surprise that he did most, if not all, of his stunts, okay? And he was actually dragged, like, by a boat, which was filmed in the ocean. But when he was, like, pulled up, they actually filmed that in one of their pools, the lake. And really seamlessly editing there, when you think about it, because they're two far different locations. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, everything was very seamless, and even the grand finale with everyone at that ocean, I thought that worked really well. One of the things I appreciated was its use of comedic humor, where, for example, you had the, let's say, college guys get out of the water. It looked like they saw a shark, but what they saw was hot girls.
right.
Oh, that, misdirection.
Yeah. Misdirection, indeed. I thought that was a fun moment.
It was fun.
You know, I thought, and I think if the movie had more moments like that, I'm not saying like just objectifying women, but just playing towards its humorous side of things, I think it could have worked a little bit better. Because those were great moments.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, absolutely.
So many extras on the set. There was like 5,000 plus extras. So Turtletop, the director, he said one of the actual, ironically, some of the hardest days of filming was when he had all the extras, because they had to make sure during filming, or like when they were done filming, everyone was safely out of the water. But when you have to keep track of 5,000 plus people, that takes a long time.
Right.
So he said those were tough, like keeping tabs on everybody. And he doesn't know how many made it to the second day. But yeah, big budget movies.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people, and he did do research before he started filming, like Chinese beaches that were like heavily populated, and he found like a bunch of pictures where people were just in inner tubes so close to each other. He's like, hey, that looks like a great place that a shark would like. So, hence, we brought it to the international waters.
Yes, indeed. And you know, I thought they set up a lot of, you know, as far as what worked for them, setting up how they were going to kill the shark, and sort of points of weaknesses, all the, you know, they whether it was the boats, not the, whatever you call it, I don't know. I need to be a marine biologist or something to know this stuff. Sorry, I don't. But anyway, I thought they set that up, and kind of it's, and the whole notion of him sort of sacrificing himself, and yet he doesn't ultimately end up sacrificing himself. I thought that was a nice through line of, like, you know, it's not necessarily always about who you lose, it's also about who you save.
Right.
And I thought that worked really well for the ending of that.
Sure.
And, you know, if you talk about gore, like, the fact that the way to kill it is through the eye, ultimately.
Yeah.
What? Well,
we're just blinded.
Well, I mean, people say, if you're being attached by a shark, punch it in the nose and try to scratch out its eyes. Yeah, that's the first thing I'm thinking of. Other than, ah!
Well, Well, even Bing Bing's character herself, like when she was trying to do the poison, she was like, let me go for its eye.
Right.
It's, I don't know.
I'm trying to get it into the mouth. The eye, it's a softer spot. Mm-hmm. It goes, and it can go directly into the head from where a shark's eye is. And it's not a big spot, but it is a softer spot to try to insert something.
Right.
And it's very sensitive to the animal.
Well, it's a vulnerable spot on any creature.
So.
Absolutely. Also, just as a quick side note, never have I seen a movie where I was less scared of just regular sharks. Just swarms and stuff. I was like, stupid little things.
I think scaling really does help. When we saw the Megalodon compared to a regular-sized shark that we're normally afraid of, you're like, oh no, the Megalodon's literally 70% more scary than a regular shark.
Yeah, and I thought that they did a decent job scaling as well. And again, I'll just say, I urge people that if you like this sort of thing, read the first book, read the book, or the couple. They're a lot of fun. And when you talk, and he really does a great job of scaling and what this thing can fit into its mouth and how vicious it is. I'll just say this too, the opening of the book actually opens up in the Jurassic era with a Tyrannosaurus Rex just like coming to a seashore and I don't know, like lapping up some water, and it gets taken down by a Meg. And so, obviously, that's a reference to Jurassic Park. And it's like, you get your T-Rex, a Meg can take down a T-Rex. That's how big it and powerful it is. And I liked...
Everyone's afraid of the T-Rex.
Everyone's afraid of the T-Rex. And what was the line in this movie? Like, man versus Meg is not even...
It's not even a fight.
It's not even a fight. It's a massacre or something. Yeah. So, yeah.
We should explore non-lethal options. For who? Us or the Meg?
Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of funny lines and that I appreciated in that way.
I love their self-realization. Like, they cannot take themselves too seriously.
Yeah, and that's what makes even though its budget is not B-movie, it still had that monster movie, like, B-movie-ish kind of attitude, so to speak, feeling to it. And yeah, the lines were funny. To me, it delivers that thing. It's not for the serious moviegoer. I know the movie audience I saw it with, they were screaming and they were having a good time watching the film. So,
well, let me ask you, this ties into box office numbers, but a lot of people are like bummed like that this isn't more, let's say, Piranha 3D. However, when you really break it down, Piranha 3D didn't do much at the box office, whereas this... It's actually doing pretty good.
It over-indexed.
Yeah.
Far over, by two. This movie was going into the weekend, people were touting it as a really big bomb for the summer because of its $130, $150 million budget. And they were saying it was going to do no more than 23. And it ends up doing like, what, 45? Mm-hmm. And it's still, during its midweeks, it's doing good. Which is good for Jason Statham, and I think it's part marketing. And it's that time of summer, and people, I enjoyed this. Well, you brought up Rampage. I was like, I had more fun at this than I did watching Rampage.
Yeah, Rampage, I did too. Awesome.
Well, I think it also helps with the casting too. I mean, Jason, he's big in America for like the fans, and he is big internationally. Fast Furious, like the Furious movies are huge globally.
Yeah.
And then when you have two well-known Asian actors, that helps with the Chinese market. And the location takes place near China, so it really does help. And just with the development of this film, they partnered with China to help finance and fund this movie and distribute it. Right. So it did, yes, there's a lot of money going into it, but it's also being sourced to bigger markets than Piranha 3D was.
That
is true.
So, and it had, you know, I mean, yeah, internationally it did really well. So I know a lot of people were complaining about its budget, but there's every bit. I mean, they're saying it's 130. I had read 150. But
well, also about 150 almost, give or take, just in advertisement.
Yeah. So, you know, when you talk about foreign, $154 million from foreign box office, that's 71% of its entire box office.
Thank you, China.
So, yeah, and so we had $62 million here as of August 16th. Not too shabby, but $216.6 million worldwide. Nobody really saw that coming. Which
no one saw the Meg coming either.
Yeah.
Financially, that's a success.
So far, I mean, it'll make more money and more than likely make its money back. And you just say to yourself, how did people miss this? Like, I mean, and they were off by a lot. So I don't know. It's one of those things.
I think they just thought it was a dumb movie. Yeah, I mean, critics at the end, they have it at 48%. Yes.
Which isn't awful.
Well, yeah, you know, and here's the thing. I also look at it, like, the way you have to kind of critique a movie is, A, who is this for? And is the genre that it's in good? Like, sure. This is a, I don't know. The genre is not a dumb movie, but it's a ridiculous movie. Yeah. It's tongue-in-cheek and all that. So you know what? For what it is, I would give it an 80, 85.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. It is a B movie, to say the least, even though the budget doesn't reflect that. And it's a silly summer movie. Like I said, I enjoyed it more than Rampage. I had fun. Thought it could have been – there are parts where it could have been better. Follow the book. I said that all at the top. So – but ultimately, I walked out and I was like, okay, that was fine. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I had fun. So,
anything to add, Marissa?
No, I agree, because I've seen a lot of shark movies thanks to Phil. The majority of the shark movies I've been with Phil. I made Phil watch this one again. I was like, I'm not watching this by myself.
How did you fare watching it, by the way? Because I know it's not necessarily your...
It's not, because I thought it was more of a, it's going to be a scary film. And then watching it, I was like, no, this is actually more lighthearted and more comedic. And like, it was lit better, so you can tell there was comedy involved. It wasn't as serious. So like, I think that helps me just as a viewer, that I was like, oh, okay, I can breathe. I don't feel like I'm actually going to die. So it helped in that way. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. I'll just say that.
Yeah, so... Well, can I do my Jaws references? Or
yes, I was going to cue you up, because I was going to say we've talked about a lot of things, but one thing we definitely have to hit is all the Jaws references
all
in this
Jaws,
movie.
And it hits every single movie, which I was sort of kind of amazed at, and I don't know if it was done intentionally or not. And to you, the audience, who are really into the Jaws movies, maybe I missed something, but these are the ones that stood out to me. So in Jaws, so I'm going to start in order. So Jaws, the main one that sort of made me almost groan because it was so obvious was Pippin, where are you, Pippin? So the name of the little dog in this movie is Pippin, where Pippin is actually used as a foreshadowing device just before little Alex Kintner gets eaten. And the name of that dog was Pippin. Shark cage to poison the shark. That's the crew of the Orca, Hooper, Quint, Brody. That's what they, like, that's their last chance is, that shark's going to tear that cage to pieces. You got any better ideas? And Hooper goes down to poison the shark with the dart. And then I already mentioned the bite radius on the thing. So in Jaws 2, we've got nobody believes Chief Brody that there might be another great white in the shores off of Amity. In this movie, we have nobody believes Jonas, that there's a megalodon in existence, and in fact, it ruins his career. Now, here's a stretch, but in Jaws 2, there's kids out in sailboats that the shark attacks, and a lot of them flip over, and a lot of them, their safe haven is the bottom, the capsized sailboat, so they're hanging in this little flotilla, so to speak, on the bottom sides of the boat they're on top of. In this one, our main characters, it capsizes a boat, and they're stuck on the bottom side of the boat as they're floating away, as the tide's taking away. Jaws 3. The main thing, there are actually two references that I gleaned from Jaws 3. One is the baby shark misdirect. That's a big story. Jaws 3 took place at SeaWorld in Florida. There was a baby great white shark, and then we learn, once they capture that, we learn that there's the mama shark that's far bigger. So they had that switch. There's also the, in Jaws 3, had the crate scene in which somebody gets eaten, and we see him being eaten from inside the shark's mouth. So in this one, we had that cylindrical tube, which was a really cool scene, that cage, I thought.
Flawed cage.
Right. But in any case, I was like, okay, Jaws 3. And then from Jaws the Revenge, there is a banana boat sequence in this movie. And the banana boat sequence in Jaws the Revenge was where somebody was taken off of a banana boat. So those are the references of all the Jaws movies that I found, or Easter eggs that I found in the Meg, that at least struck me. If there was anybody else, that I could have missed something, but that's what I found.
Here's my favorite as we wrap out, and it's a very apropos, was the actual ending, because we have the boat, we're zooming out, and then we go underwater, which is a trope of many, many sort of movies. You go back, like, one of the more obvious ones for me, you can name anyone you want, Godzilla, right?
Right.
We thought this is the, what's his name, Matt Brody one. Is it Matt? No. Whatever.
Matt Brody one.
No, well, it's you know what I'm talking about. Back the in most, the 2000.
Oh, the, Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, Ferris Bueller. Oh. What's his name?
Anyway.
Yeah. Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick.
That's it. Matt Brody.
You had their initials, right?
Sure.
There you go. Anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because they're always setting up a sequel, right? And so with this one, you kind of get that sense, oh, we're setting up a sequel. There's a third that we didn't know about. Dun, dun, dun. No, but they just write the French word for the end, Finn. Which is funny.
Which I thought was funny.
That cracked me up.
Again, it didn't take, like you said, it really didn't take itself
seriously.
That's why it should have had more carnage.
Absolutely. But it didn't, and that's where we are. We've talked about this movie. There's other things we could, of course, talk about, but that's what the comment section is for. Let us know what you thought of it. We'll interact with you. We'll also interact with you through our personal handles. At DMovies1701 is where
Please?
You can interact with Dimitri.
Please do.
In fact, I'm told he was a big hit this week, whatever that means.
Well, here's what happened. Tessa Thompson was announced this week to be the voice of Lady, in the live version of Lady and the Tramp. And I said,
she's awesome.
I was like, oh, I just tweeted out, I am so on board with this. I think she's got the perfect voice for Lady, blah, blah, blah. Never have I ever received so many likes for something, and I have no idea, because I don't have, I think I have more likes than I have followers. So I have no idea. And I was like, wow,
there you go.
I'm always going to mention Tessa Thompson in a very positive light. Deservedly so, mind you.
She's awesome.
She is awesome. So it just, of all the things that I said.
Look out for more Tessa tweets from Dimitri.
Tessa Thompson in the Meg.
At Serafini TV.
That's right.
I'm at Phil Svitek. I'm excited to see more of these types of movies because I think it can actually have sequels.
We might actually have one now that it's made as much money as it has.
I am down.
Me too.
That's what I said at the end of watching this one. I was like, if there was two Megalodons, good chances there could be a third. Oh.
Anyway, we'll be here when that happens. For other shark movies, we've done The Shallows. We've done
47. We did 11.
All that fun stuff. Anyway, we've got other stuff coming for you, like Crazy Rich Asians. No, that's not a knock on this movie. I'm saying that's another movie that we will be covering. Anyway, see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.